But thank you for being with us and taking some time from your day and dedicating it to worship together and honor our God. It is our sole endeavor in our time together that we can be an encouragement to each other and an encouragement to you. And as we reflect and look upon what we can find revealed in God's truth, we know that that's the way we can do that and be that. And we hope we can be that for you today. What I want to do as a subject matter for today is looking at the idea of what does it mean to be a disciple of Christ. And as you can see highlighted in the excerpt, a very good photographic excerpt, of the phrase, follow me. And we'll see here in one of the contexts in just a moment, one of the places where this is found, but it's not the only occurrence. Jesus makes this call to follow me multiple times in his life, in his service, in his teaching. And so what does that mean? What does it mean to be a disciple of Christ? And so as we begin and get ourselves and our thoughts oriented on this, let's look at Matthew, the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 18. Now, as my style, out of convenience, I will have the scriptures that I intend to use today on the overhead, but please do follow along. It's good for you to read as well as to hear at the same time. But as we go through, I also do this so you can understand where I believe some of the core things are in these, which is why I bother to take the time to highlight certain key ideas or phrases. So let us read Matthew, the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 18. And so this is a period of time right after Jesus has endured the tests and his trials in the wilderness and is now gone back into the Galilee region. And we find him now walking by the sea. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. And immediately they left the boat, their father, and followed him. And you can see this core idea, this phrase that is on this photograph at the top, and also very tightly associated, if not the same, as you'll see me bear out as we go through this lesson this morning, of being a disciple of Christ, is Jesus' call to follow me. Now, what does that mean? Let's look at that. So on one part, follow me is an acknowledgement of Jesus at the head. It says, I am going to follow after Jesus. Now, as we'll get to in a little bit, that's very exclusionary in another regard. We're not to follow after some man or some false doctrine or some teaching that is not part of his. So this idea that he starts with, follow me, clearly puts Jesus as the authority and the truth. And so therefore, to know him and follow him means accepting and acknowledging who he is. Step number one. Number two, and I will make you, speaking specifically, I believe, of their hearts. It's a transformation. We've studied this before, if you remember, back in Romans, the 12th chapter, about the transforming, the renewing of our minds. So there is something authoritative about what it means to follow Jesus, where he then says, and I will make you, I will transform you into something that you can be by following after me. It will be a transformation of their hearts. And then the third is a purpose. He will make them to be fishers of men. Or the idea of our hands, our actions, the things that we can do. And so this also identifies that to be a disciple of Jesus has a purpose. And the purpose is to be out with and around and for other people. And that it is an action that is associated with being committed to Christ. So this is the core of what I believe that it means when we talk about being a disciple of Christ. With one key part being, follow me. Now I want to point out just a few other things, in case you're not aware. This by itself is not a teaching aspect, authoritative by just the virtue of the counts themselves, but it is informative about the emphasis of what this means to us. And so we call ourselves Christians. Did you know the phrase Christian is only in the New Testament 3 times? Believers, referenced 4 times. Saints, 62 times. Disciple, singular or plural, 263 times. Let that sink in for a moment. So there's something very important about what this word is supposed to tell us, because it is used often as it is sprinkled out through the New Testament. And I'll point out something else. That level of use is concentrated primarily in the Gospels and in Acts. And so it is used specifically by Jesus in calling people to be disciples of Him. There are some other places where it's used as disciples of the Pharisees or others. But it is predominantly used by Jesus calling people to be disciples of His, which is important. And then the other interesting part of this is the word disciple is not actually used in the Old Testament. But when you think about the Old Testament law, that's not that surprising. Because that is a law, that is a period of time where the identity of the people was associated by their birth, largely. And so really the closest concept that you have to discipleship in the Old Testament is the idea of a master and his servant, or a slave owner and a slave. And so there you've got the parallel as it relates to this, which is a servant then is identified with their master. A disciple is also identified with your master. But it is unique in the sense that discipleship is a willing bonding of myself to who it is that I'm following. And so it is us, individually, each of us, choosing and committing our lives to be a disciple of Jesus, to bond ourselves to Jesus and who He is. Okay. So now let's go a little bit further. So in John the 8th chapter, verse 31 through 32, and what I'm going to do here is just to give you a few cases of where this appears in the Gospels in particular, just as an example of how prevalent this phrase is. And by the way, the counts that I took are come from places like Strong's that will do word studies, and so you can from that then use those counts. So that's where they come from. But here in John the 8th chapter, verse 31, so Jesus said to the Jews who had believed Him, "If you abide in My word, you are truly My disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And so here you have identification of what it means to be His disciples and the connection with the idea of abiding in My word. That's what identified them to be His disciples. Luke the 6th chapter, verse 40, "A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher." Shows the relationship between the disciple is below their teacher, and that only through full training can one be expected to be like his teacher. So not only is he identifying an order, but he's identifying a purpose, a need to become fully trained. John 13, a context that we've recently studied in Herb's class. "By this all people will know that you are My disciples if you have love for one another. So you've got a responsibility. If you're going to be known as a disciple of Jesus, then you've got to carry out something for others, which is to show them love. To show true care and concern for them. And so these are just three. And we'll go through a few more, but that means you've got 260 others to go locate at some point. And I would very much encourage you to take that as a personal challenge. To go find and understand and seek out what this means in all of the different ways that it is used. To be a disciple of Jesus. To be one of His. So, as it is defined as a base word, and you may be familiar with the linguist Thayer. He was a Greek linguist many years ago. And so, as he looked at and defines this word, it's methetes for what it's worth. You don't speak Greek, so that really doesn't matter much to you. But that word, as it is used in the Greek back in Jesus' days, was a learner and a follower. And I'm putting special emphasis on the word "and" because the two go together. You cannot be one without the other and still be a disciple. Let me give just a simple analogy. We don't have much of this in our culture anymore. But it's the idea of an apprentice in a master relationship as if it is a skill, a trade school. And so the apprentice is a learner of the master. If you're a plumber, they still have this, I think, as a practice even today. An apprentice plumber is learning and studying after the master plumber and all of the techniques and tricks and what does it mean to fully master the skill of plumbing a house new or repairing plumbing in a house. And so that apprentice will take years of studying before he reaches something of an equivalent of a master's level. So he's got to be trained. That's the reason why I pulled that out earlier. But likewise, the apprentice, if he's just learning but is not following what the master is doing, then what's the point of the learning? If you just listen to what the master says and goes, that doesn't work for me, and then you go and you plumb a house the way that he sees fit, it's not going to turn out very well. Or on the flip side of it, you go, okay, I've learned that. That's pretty good. And then somebody asks you to plumb a house, and you go, yeah, I could plumb the house pretty well. But then you never plumb the house. Have you actually accomplished anything? See, those two things are self-evident truths, which is the reason why I think at a very base level we have to understand to be a disciple, and therefore a disciple of Jesus means we are both a learner and a follower. So now what does this mean? And I'm going to do two contrasts. That means a disciple is thinking the way Jesus thinks, feeling the way Jesus feels, in acting and reacting the way Jesus does. And there is not a list that I can give you, because as we'll read here in a moment from John the 20th chapter, where John the writer says, there's truly many other signs Jesus did in the presence of his disciples that are not recorded in this book. So there's not a list I can give you for what that means. But I can point you to what you find recorded in the Gospels, what you can find recorded in Acts, what you can find recorded in the Epistles, what you can find recorded in the Old Law as a mirror and a type of who Jesus was supposed to be. And you can come to a very clear understanding what it means to think, feel, and act like Jesus. Now, I'll tell you up front, that is a lifelong endeavor. Lifelong endeavor. None of us will ever truly, I believe, understand what this means. But as a disciple, we are committed to that, to its end, which is to be a learner and a follower of Jesus. Now, what is it not? Well, it's not being better than anybody else in the world, because that's not the measure. The measure is our Master. It is not being better than other Christians either, as if that's some exclusive class that has this all figured out. And it is not a learner only, and I'm going to add, it is not a Sunday only commitment either. This is a lifelong pursuit and commitment to be like the Master. And the Master is Jesus. Now I want to pause here for a moment because, as I understand, I have a little bit of an encounter with this myself growing up in Florida. But there was an era in this region of the country, I believe it was called many different things. One of them was the Disciples of Christ. And I believe that they made a mistake, an error, in applying or understanding what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. Scott referenced this, I believe, loosely in the Bible class this morning. Now let me elaborate on it from my point of view. A disciple is about my relationship with Jesus. It is a misuse of the idea to turn this into a verb. What I mean by that is you cannot disciple other people. It just doesn't work with the language. A disciple is my relationship with the Master. But I cannot make you a disciple any more than what it means for you to make me to be a learner and follower of Jesus. You have to choose that yourself. You have to make that commitment yourself. You have to endeavor throughout your life, yourself, to that goal and to that end. And so as we go through this, I have another endeavor, and that is to make it clear what I believe is the biblical idea of being a disciple of Christ, and likewise, what does it mean to be in the world as a disciple of Christ? And so we'll go through and take a look at that from the positive sense. So let's briefly look at this. I think this is probably the easier one for this audience to understand, to become a learner of Christ. And so Tom read for us a little while ago, Matthew the 11th chapter, verse 28. Now, the reason why I wanted to pause and look at this one in particular is because, first of all, where do you learn from? He says, learn from me. Learn from Jesus. Learn from the Master himself. That's why I said, if you want to know what that means, go read the Gospels, go read Acts, go read the Epistles, understand how Jesus is a type in the Old Testament. And that's how you can learn this. Learn from me. But now, why learn from Jesus? I am gentle and lowly in heart. He is a perfect Master to teach us. And as we see in the Gospels, as it is laid out by his life, his actions, and his words, he exhibited this. I am gentle and lowly in heart. And then the result is, you can find rest for your souls. And I'll tell you, as I've gone through life and I've seen this and experienced it, life is messy. And it brings sorrow. And it brings pain. And it has many problems and challenges, both personally for myself and for others around me. And so do people need and want and desire and long for rest? Yes, they do. Unfortunately, though, they're looking for it most of the time in all the wrong places. Because they fundamentally misunderstand something about what does it mean to learn from Jesus, as if it is a burdensome exercise. Which is why he goes on, I think, to elaborate on this by concluding by saying, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And especially when you contrast that with what the burden and heaviness is of trying to endure in life by yourself, I can tell you emphatically this is a very true statement. So to become a learner of Christ, you need to look to him for what that means. As a second one, John the 20th chapter, I alluded to this a little while ago. John 20, as John is concluding that book, 30 and 31, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, which is just astounding when you think about it. Here we've got in just enormous richness of events in detail given about our Lord. And John is basically saying it's just scratching the surface. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. Why do you want to become a learner of Jesus? Because He's the way to be able to have life everlasting. So become a learner of Christ. But now I want to concentrate really the rest of my thoughts for us today on what does it mean to become a follower of Christ, right? I'll argue that I believe most of us in this room understand you should be a learner of Christ. But to be a follower is something that is both very broad, very rich, and has its own life endeavor behind it as well. And so turning to Matthew the 7th chapter, beginning in verse 21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. This is the reason why being a learner of Christ is not enough. You've got to follow Him in a particular way, and you've got to know how to follow Him. And so He says very clearly, you can say, Lord, Lord, as if you have a desire to want to learn or hear or listen or even follow Him, but it is the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven is the one that is a true disciple. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. And here's really where the strength of this thought has to come into play. Continuing on, everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And so if you want to be a follower of Jesus, you have to build your foundation on Jesus. As I was going through and studying, preparing for this, one secular writer put it this way, Christians today behave like you can divorce the teachings of Jesus from who He was and expect to get the result. That's the foolish man that we're about to continue on reading. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat against the house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. You cannot, and I want to say this very emphatically and clearly, you cannot separate between learning about Jesus and building your life on Jesus, and therefore being like Jesus. You cannot separate a thing out of that chain of thought process. And that is what Jesus is trying to tell us here in Matthew the 7th chapter. If you want to be wise, you listen to Him, you build on Him, and you be like Him. If you want to be foolish, you can listen, you can build it on something else, and then you're going to fall. And your life will fall. And anything that you desire for it to come from that will fall. And there's really not much more explanation than I think than that regarding this concept. But let's keep going. Matthew the 16th chapter, 24 through 25. Then Jesus told His disciples, if anyone would come after Me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow Me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for My sake will find it. Now, we recognize this side of the cross, what the cross is, and I will also say, largely, we have a very romantic view of the cross with regards to what it means to us as Christians. But understand to the person listening to Jesus in this day, at this time, before Jesus' crucifixion, He's basically telling them, you are going to be like the most despicable person on the planet And in order to be like me, therefore, you're going to have to give it all up and be despicable in the eyes of the world. And so to the hearer of Jesus' day, this is a shocking, shocking statement. But now I want to ask us for just a moment, having, I hope, a better understanding of what the cross is and what it represents, and the rightful thoughts and ideas that we just immersed ourselves in for the last hour. Understanding what the cross means to me, as I'm responsible for why Jesus is on that cross. Therefore, what does this mean to me and to you? Is frankly the more important question. Because what this means is, to take up my cross means I need to be ready to do the exact same things that Jesus did, maybe not in action, but in certainly outcome. And will the world hate me for what it means to follow after Christ? More than likely. Will the world reject what it is that I say as a mirror of my master? More than likely. Now, so far at least, none of us has the threat of being nailed to a cross. But that doesn't mean this challenge is any less important or less demanding. And so we need to be committed to following our Christ just as He went to this extreme. John the 15th chapter, beginning in verse 8. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. And so to be a follower means we've got to bear fruit. And as he says, bear much fruit. And that by itself is its own lesson. But I think you understand and have an idea of the notion of what does it mean to bear fruit. Later on, Jesus is going to use the analogy of a vine. And if the vine doesn't produce anything, it gets cut off and cast in the fire. You need to ask yourself, then how do I bear fruit? And we're going to go on and look at some examples of that here in just a little bit. But there's a boundless, just infinite way and levels that you can produce fruit for the Lord. But to be a follower then means we must bear fruit. Because that's the association that Jesus says, to prove to be my disciples. So you can't just sit here, you can't just learn and listen. You can build your foundation, but then you've got to actually do something with that. You've got to bear fruit because of that. And that's what he's saying here. Matthew the 10th chapter, 24 through 26. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they malign those of his household? This is what I was trying to say earlier. You want to truly deny yourself and take up your cross and follow after him, they're going to say some really nasty stuff about us if we're truly a disciple. Because they did it to Jesus. They called him having full of a demon in this particular context before what happens. If they're going to say that about Jesus, what are they going to say about you and me? And so we have to be like the teacher in this regard. But don't lose sight. Even as we pursue and approach that, this is, I think, the key to that success. So have no fear of them. For nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. We can call people to do this, and it would be very challenging. But what we really need to focus on and be able to accomplish this is what Jesus says. So have no fear of them. And how do you achieve that part of being a follower of Jesus? Because Jesus had no fear of them either. So being a follower of Christ means to be like the Master and have no fear. But now let's fast forward this a little bit, and you're probably asking yourself the question, so how do I do this? And let's look at a few cases, but let's look at Paul's example first, which I think is an excellent one, as he recounts it in 2 Thessalonians to the Thessalonian brethren, for exactly how did Paul himself carry this out. Beginning in chapter 2, verse 7, "But we were gentle among you." So first of all, as Paul mirrored his life after the Master, he first says, "We were gentle among you," like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, your attitude, your heart, what Jesus said in the beginning to the call to the four disciples, "I will make you fishers of men," to have this heart, affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. And so he was gentle, he was desirous, but then he acted upon that by sharing himself and by sharing the gospel with them out of an affectionate heart for wanting them to experience good things. "For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil." So they worked. "We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you." Now what that's speaking about is Paul's what we would call secular work in order to be able to have a livelihood that would enable him to do these things for the brothers in Thessalonica without being a burden to them. And so Paul had a day job or a night job, but then he also was doing everything else. And so think about that for a moment. How far did Paul commit himself was essentially giving his whole life, both what he did in his work to have a livelihood, as well as his work in service to them in being able to provide for their needs physically and spiritually. I say this way on purpose because I fear that here in the United States, because of our affluence, that we have become hoarders of our time for ourselves. And that is not what God has said for us to be the purpose for our time. It's not ours, number one. The time is not ours. We're merely users of it as we go through this life. Paul basically said, "I work for you 24/7. And so when we look at this and we want to model ourselves after this, what does that mean for us to pattern ourselves after an example like Paul? And Paul being a pattern after our Lord. You know, Jesus at one point said to his disciples, "Where is it for the Son of Man to sleep? And what possessions does he have?" Rhetorical question. He had neither. But he worked tirelessly to be able to help people relieve their sicknesses, but more than anything, to show them the glory of God. And so how do we approach our time and what we choose to do throughout our day? And how we do that, it's really the how we do that, which is the important part. Do you go through your day looking at it as a way to glorify God in anything that you do? But continuing on, "that we might not burden any of you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." hopefully you have an understanding and a representation for what this meant for Paul. So then, summarizing this for just a moment, what does it really mean to be a disciple? A few summary points. It means learning about Jesus, becoming like Jesus, abiding in Jesus' words, bearing fruit, loving other disciples, loving Jesus, bearing our cross, forsaking and denying everything, unequivocally, without provision, no exceptions. And this is just scratching the surface. I'm just sitting here, standing here, giving you some thoughts and ideas for about 30 to 35 minutes when you've got the greatest book known to mankind, delivered by God, in front of you to know what this truly means. You have to commit yourself to want to know and understand and then follow after the Master in that. So now, summarizing that, I want to turn to something more specific. What can I do? Or in this specific case, what can you do? Now I want you to ask this question for yourself. What can I do? So, fathers and husbands, lead your families and have the heart of the Master. Learn what that means. And then put it into practice in everything that you do, recognizing that you have a responsibility and a model in Jesus Christ Himself. Mothers and wives, support your husband and teach your children. That is an enormous responsibility. And I'll say this, in our culture and day and age, I think our culture in particular wants to wipe away the importance of what this is. As if these responsibilities can be transferred to somebody else. They cannot. Now, I'm not saying that you have to totally dedicate yourself and your time to be inside the house, inside four walls. Go look at Proverbs, the 31st chapter, in the worthy woman. She did a lot of work for other people. And she did a lot of things to provide for her family. So if you want to know what this means, go look at Proverbs, the 31st chapter. But you need to understand the heart of this means to support your husband and teach your children. Single, or if you're just a child yourself, honor your parents and learn to serve others. And each and every one of us in this room today is one or more of these. So this is not a total list either, as if to say, oh, if I just do that, then everything's okay. Hopefully you've gotten that from this lesson as well. This is not a checklist. This is not something that's intended to be restrictive in what the content is that we're talking about. But in everything, learn more always, be quick to serve others, and glorify God in everything. Because, in my view, these are the three things that Jesus did in every encounter that He has that's recorded for us, both in what He did, as well as in certain cases, His inward thoughts that we find revealed for us. He was always serving what God wanted Him to do. And it was always done for the glory of God. And so for us to commit ourselves to be like the Master means that we must have His same heart. So in summary, I want to leave you with this. A faith that gives nothing, costs nothing, and suffers nothing is worth nothing. So what are you willing to do to truly learn and follow after Christ? That's a question I want to leave with you today. And hopefully that's a question you will ask yourself continuously, because there is no final answer to that question. It is a lifelong pursuit that we have said and committed and given to our Lord in order to achieve. But the first step to do that is you've got to recognize who He is. And you've got to learn from Him. You've got to confess that He is our Savior. And you need to be baptized. That's just step one. And then the life that comes from that and committing yourself to learning and following after Him is everything else. But we call you this morning if you need our help in any way, together while we stand and sing.